Hey, Charisse.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Well, here we are again to record another session of We've Got the Keys with Carrot Properties. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right. What are we talking about tonight?
Let's see. I think we should possibly talk about maybe the seller side of it.
You know, we have been giving the buyers a lot of love. So it's time to show the sellers some love and what goes along with selling a home. So why don't you get started?
All right. So my question is, what makes a person want to sell? What is the motivating factor of why a person wants to sell? And the reason why I ask that is because that tells us as realtors what we need to do or how we need to proceed in that particular transaction. Do you agree?
I would agree. I think it's usually change in family or change of circumstances.
Correct.
So, meaning that, you know, my family's growing, I need a bigger house, or, you know, we're empty nesters now, we need a smaller house. Relocation. We're in a generation now where a lot of people find themselves sandwiched between small children and caring for parents. So they need like multi-generational housing. Just, you know, change of scenery, change of, you know, I've lived in this house for 10 plus years. It worked then, it doesn't work now, and I'm ready to move on.
That's correct. And with that being said, it's like when you think about the motivation factors of a person that's selling, it also depends on, it makes you have to realize too, okay, is this going to be something where it's be done quickly? Or is it something where we can, I don't want to say take your time, but, you know, you can, in a sense, take your time and exactly do, you know, everything that you need to do in order to make sure it goes. If it's something where it's a quick sale, of course, there's a different way that we approach it than if it's somebody who's, okay, I have time to spend and to do the proper things that I need to do. Do you agree?
I would agree, you know, and one of the situations we see where people have to sell quickly, because we're going to touch on 2 points tonight. a lot of times people need to sell quickly because they're relocating or because they find themselves in a financial strain and they're trying to sell their house prior to going into foreclosure or whatever. And regardless of the situation, the most important thing is you let your realtor know what's going on at all points so that they can move with expediency and get it done based on the circumstances. Plus, you have to disclose some of those things, because if the house is being sold short of foreclosure, we have to disclose that, you know, in the transaction on MLS, you know, into a potential buyer, because it affects how the transaction may go. I always tell my clients who are buyers looking at short sales, have a lot of patience. My longest short sale took almost 14 months.
Yes.
Because you're not just dealing with the seller, you're dealing with the bank, a trustee, sometimes bankruptcy court. It's a lot of different parties.
Correct. And people think that because we say short sale, it's supposed to be a short sale, right? A short amount of time.
No. I wish, right?
I know, right? It's just does not work that way at all. It's totally something different. So, you know what? For those who don't know, what is the definition of a short sale in layman's terms?
A short sale is where you're requesting permission from the bank or bankruptcy court to sell your home for less than what you owe on it. That happens. You know, this is going to circle back to some of our earlier conversations, but sometimes, you know, you're in a home, you've lived there for a couple years, you need to sell it because you no longer can make the payments, or you've gotten so behind on payments, you can't cure the debt or catch up your payments. And you're basically asking the bank, hey, let me put this house on the market and see what it will sell for. Right now, we're in a seller's market. So most of the time, the houses are not going like way below, you know, market price. A couple years ago, there were foreclosures and short sales everywhere. And they were like, I mean, people were getting steals.
Yes, left and right. Yes. Not like that.
No, and it's funny because, Sharice, you can attest to this. We'll often get clients who we sold a house to 5 or 6 years ago, mm-hmm. and their friends will say, oh, you know, you sold bedroom, 2.5 bath, and they paid, you know, $129 for it. And they're like, you think you can find us that today? And I'm like, maybe in a Barbie house, because it's really not likely to happen, you know, in the current market. Yeah.
Yes, yes, definitely. Like right now, I'm dealing with a client right now, and it's the same thing. It's like, oh, you know, Sharice, you know, I know that it's been great, and they're still talking about trying to purchase a foreclosure. And I'm like, well, we could possibly try to find a foreclosure out there right now, but it's not what you think it's going to be right now.
Yeah, so. I mean, foreclosures are far and few between. But let's talk about something else, kind of along the same lines. Mm-hmm. How many times do you get people calling or wanting to ask you about these quickie listing services?
Yeah, I actually had some folks talking to me about it the other day, and they were asking me my opinion on some of those, and I won't say the name. I don't think we can say the name, but...
You hear a lot of commercials.
Yes. And they were saying that, you know, they wanted to try it because what they are being told is that they can put their house on the market or they can sell it to these companies or what have you. The company will put it on the market for them. But up front, they will guarantee them a certain amount of money for the house up front. And they didn't have to worry about repairs or anything like that. So they have been asking me about it. I don't necessarily trust it. A lot of times you're dealing with people who like realtors or representatives that are not even here, that are local. So they don't even know what the house looks like. They don't know anything about the house. They don't know anything about the person that's selling the house. So I'm not a big fan of that because of that.
Let me say this. Mm-hmm. If you really think about it, so the commercials we see are a cash offer, close within 2 weeks, move on to your next house. Mm-hmm. So if you really think about it, these companies are in business to make money. And right. What I have seen is that they grossly undervalue the market value of the home because mm-hmm. they're like, oh, it needs this much repairs. But they're also building in a pretty big profit margin. And they mm-hmm. say, oh, you get to skip paying commissions. But let's think about it. Average commission total that a seller is going to pay 6 to 8%, depending upon where you are. And, you know, if there's, you know, other fees that go along with it, but 6 to 8% is about normal.
Correct.
Whereas these companies, many of them charge over 15%, and they don't call it commission. They call it administrative costs and fees. They call intake fees. They call it a number of things. And what mm-hmm. they do is they don't, because they're not realtors or because they're not disclosing it in a normal transaction, they don't have to tell you exactly what it is. So there's the rules are a little bit more slippery.
Mm-hmm.
And what people will find, I always tell people, hey, I'm not saying don't use them. Talk to them. See if they're going to offer you a great deal and then see if they can come through. Because here's what I have found happens a lot of the times. They'll give you this pretty offer. They'll get into the transaction and then they'll say, oh, your house needs way more repairs. Or we've done our research now. We're not going to be able to give you that initial offer price. We're going to have to come down. Case in point, I have a listing that recently closed. Mm-hmm. And
congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. And my seller was very skeptical. It was an older house and she knew it needed some repairs and she really wanted to just be rid of the house. So she got she was contacted by investors. She was contacted by the orange service. I don't know if I can say that. Like,
don't you say that?
Yeah, I'm not going to say that. And so I said, sure, go ahead and get quotes from them. Tell me, I'd love to see what they're offering. The investor offered her about $65,000 less than market value of her house. The
other service offered her, and the investor, once they came in and did a what he called a full inspection, but it was really like a full walkthrough, he took that down even more. So it was like $85,000 below list price. The service, their offer price was even less. And they said, oh, we'll pay you cash. You'll have it within 15 days. And I said, I tell you what, if we can't get this house sold in 45 days, you know what you have, you know what the other options are. We were able to sell our house. Now, admittedly, it was an older house. The house is over 40 years old. So she did have to have some repairs done. But even with the repairs, even with commissions, the difference in what we were able to sell her house for on the regular market versus what we were able to, what she was being offered, was almost $70,000.
What?
So, you know, I tell people, there's a cost for convenience. There's a cost for it. So have you had any sellers kind of weigh their options?
No. Well, the thing about it is that the sellers that I had, it's been land. So, you know, I do the land thing. So I haven't really had a lot of sellers. The person that was asking me about it decided not to go through with it anyway, because the family financial situation had changed. But no, I haven't. I've just been hearing different things, and I've been hearing different people, you know, ask me about the product or ask me about that service, and whether or not they felt, you know, it was something that was good. But you just gave me some more information, like an eye story that I didn't have before.
Oh, I've got a couple. I hope you will indulge me for a few moments. So here's the other thing that they do. And I didn't realize this until I was working with a builder. So you go, they call you in, you come, this service comes to your house, they talk to you, they offer you something on your house, and they say, hey, why don't you go look at this builder? This builder has a house that I think will be right up your alley. Seller says, okay, I'll go look at this new home builder. That company then goes to that new home builder and says, we're going to represent them on that transaction too, and you're going to give us this much money back because we're going to help this whole transaction happen. What? Now, as a realtor, my specialty or my main area is listings. I love to have a client where I can list your home and sell you a new home, but I'm not negotiating with the builder to improve my commission on. I accept what the builder is offering. These companies, because they're not bound by the same rules as realtors per se, sometimes they go in and negotiate a whole set of demands, and it's not necessarily for the client's benefit, it's for their benefit.
They don't care. They don't have that true due diligence to the client, because it's not a client, it's a customer.
Right.
And there's a difference between the two. So to be quite honest with you though, I didn't think that they could do that.
I'm not sure how they're getting around it. But I think it's something that's gonna certainly be challenged, because I've heard quite a few builders kind of fussing about it because it puts them in a bad position. Can I share this other story?
Please, yeah.
So this one was bad. This one was bad, Charisse. Our team, we work together very closely. You know, we always are texting each other questions and situations and scenarios. You remember I texted the team a few weeks ago about the modular home.
Yes.
So let's share with our listeners. I'll share this story. I had some wonderful buyers, first-time buyers. So sweet. Love them to death. To pieces. And they were so excited. We looked at quite a few homes. And it was one of those situations where both of them had very strong opinions about what they wanted.
Okay.
We found a house. Absolutely adorable house. Two-story home, two-car garage. It wasn't in a neighborhood, but it was like adjacent to a neighborhood, but they kind of liked that because there was no HOA. Okay.
Yes. That'll be another topic.
Yes. So that's another topic. So we looked through the house three times. We did several pre-offer walkthroughs. Now, admittedly, the house has some special features.
Okay.
It has some quirks that I was very honest and upfront with them. And I said, you know, if you like the house and you can make it work, that's what's most important. But when it's time to resale, because that's something we're always going to talk about is resale, you know, this is something we would have to be aware of. But they said, you know what, we like the house enough, we're gonna go ahead and make a move.
Mm-hmm.
So part of what we do as buyer's agency is we get all the information on the house. We pull the property condition report. We pull the mineral rights. We look at the deed, you know, number of things. So on this one, I pull the property condition report, which should tell me everything about, it's the seller's disclosure of the condition of the house.
Right.
In MLS and in the property, the seller disclosure, it said the house was site built, which means that it was normal construction on site, built on site, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. We put a contract in.
Mm-hmm.
We pay deposits. We schedule the home inspection, which any good realtor is going to require home inspection.
Exactly.
During the home inspection, I get a call.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's, now, typically, you know, with the home inspection, I'm not there for the whole inspection. We usually go at the end. And the inspector will walk us through.
Right.
In the middle of the inspection, I'm packing my stuff up, heading out the door. I get a panic call. MJ, did you know this was a modular home? What? Now, what's a modular home, Charisse?
A modular home is not built on site. It is built in someone's warehouse or factory.
Yes. And it's basically a mobile home, which, hey, if you like mobile homes, that's your business. Nobody's knocking it, but you shouldn't be advertising a site-built house. A modular home is a site-built house.
It's totally different. Totally different.
So how does this relate to these commercial or quickie selling companies? Guess who was listing the house?
One of the orange people?
Wasn't the orange ones. It was a different one. But I called the listing agent, who they just get calls off the commercials and they're like, okay, let me talk to this person.
Yeah.
You know, and she didn't know it was a modular home. She called the sellers. They were like, yeah, it's a modular home, but we didn't think that mattered.
What? That's so realtor.
Literally, the inspection was at 1 by 3:30 when we all this worked out. I had a termination because my clients didn't want a modular home. And exactly. it 200 over 200,000, they certainly weren't paying that much for a modular home.
No.
You know, then it became a legal situation. I had to put the legal hat on because as realtors, we're asking very detailed questions about the house. And when you don't disclose material information like that, you're not only on the hook as a seller, you're not only on the hook for, you know, returning earnest money. But in this situation, we've asked for them to return everything. My clients were out of pocket because so that's my recent horror story about one of those companies.
I remember you us kind of discussing that. So the thing about it is, like, what people don't understand is, or people don't realize, you may want a so-called quick solution to your selling problem. You want to get out of this house. You want to get out of the situation. And you found some company that says, hey, we're willing to get you out of this situation within 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or whatever. But they have not done their due diligence for you. So now, not only have they interrupted your time and they've extended your time with your property being on the market, but they've also put you in a really bad financial situation.
Yeah.
So you really have to be careful about who you get to represent you. As realtors, we're going to look at that type of stuff. We are on the hook for that as well.
Yes.
So legally, we have to do the right thing. We are bound by certain rules and regulations of the Real Estate Commission that we have to do certain things.
Right.
And that right there is just one of the many things that we are bound to do. So my high horse about those types of things. I'm just not really keen on some of those types of companies come in and try to take our position and try to demeanor our clients by allowing them to get into a situation that's going to be hurtful for them or hurtful to them. I'm kind of like, you know, I look at my clients as my babies. Like, you know, I want to protect them. Not only am I legally bound, but I truly want to protect them. And those are some of the things that we are wanting to do.
So on that note, Let's transition to what makes a great listing agent. How do you choose your listing agent?
Yes. Definitely experience.
Mm-hmm.
You definitely want to look at the experience of that listing agent. A listing agent is not, or agent period is not bound by emotions, of course. We should not be bound by the bottom line for us, but the bottom line for our client. Does your listing agent know the area? If your listing agent does not know the area, is your listing agent intelligent enough? Or what's the opposite of lazy?
Diligent. I would say diligent. I would just say diligent. Have they done their diligence? Yeah, diligence. Sharice done called them lazy. You're lazy. Maybe not. Maybe they just don't know.
Completely transparent. Yes. Girl, I'm getting up there in age now, man. You know, when you get at a certain age.
You're not. You're still a spring chicken girlfriend.
All right. So we want an agent that's diligent enough to give you all the material to find out all the facts that need to be found out. Like you said, it's, you know, disclosing the property information, building that rapport with that seller, because that seller has to trust you, right? So building that rapport with that seller as well, so that we do know everything that we need to know in order to make sure that the transaction is legit and goes through smoothly.
Well, and knowing what's like important. I took a listing over a couple months ago. It had been on the market for 2 months with another agent. Mm-hmm. And this person had it listed as a 3-bedroom, 2-bath. Okay.
What was it?
four bedrooms, 2.5 baths. That makes a big difference.
No.
It makes a big difference. And the folks came to me and they were so frustrated because they were like, why isn't our house selling? And I'm like, well, first of all, it's not advertised right. And you know, it wasn't to disparage the other realtor. It was just to say you're selling yourself short.
Well, that goes back to how we do things differently as well, because once you get the listing agreement and once you get all the information and you place it into the MLS, do you not go back to your client and say, hey, this is what I'm doing. This is what I'm putting out there. Do you not have that conversation with your client?
The way I do it is, after I verify everything, right, and I go to the house before I list it, because I need to see it before I put it in MLS, because once I put it in MLS, I own that information.
Correct.
So once I have the listing up in MLS, I have them look at it. Go take a look at it. And in a way, it's almost like, look at not just putting it in MLS, but some of the marketing too. And I kind of walk her through, you know, this is how I'm going to market it. This is how I'm tracking traffic online. Mm-hmm. This is how we, you know, this is how you track who's coming in and out of your house.
Right.
But the thing is, this particular house, the fourth bedroom was a bonus room that wasn't used as a bedroom, was used as a TV room, but it had a closet. That makes it a bedroom.
That makes it a bedroom, exactly.
Yeah. But the if you're an agent that does primarily buyers, or you do primarily commercial, or some unique thing, you may not know, to point out certain things.
Yeah.
The description that was MLS was nice, well-maintained home, period. And I was like, that's it? Here's the kicker. Mm-hmm. And I promise you, I'm not knocking anybody else. My photographer, who I use, which is my husband, to take pictures of my listings, when it wasn't selling initially, they said, hey, can he come take pictures? Of course, it cost them, but yes, he came and took pictures. So it's not just taking pictures and putting them in MLS. To me, it's a lot more than that. You actually sometimes have to go out and get people online to attract them to come to the house.
Yeah.
So, you know, having the right agent that is not just going to put a sign in your yard and throw some stuff in MLS, but actually is diligent in presenting It's an online introduction. I consider, you know, listings like online dating. You know what I mean? Online dating for houses.
You're right.
You know, meet this house. Walk through this house. Look at these pictures. Imagine yourself in this house.
Exactly.
When I'm prepping a house for to put on the market, mm-hmm. I'm making recommendations about taking certain furniture out, taking certain personal items out. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying staging.
Staging, mm-hmm. yes. Mm-hmm. Making notes, like if you have cats, I need to note that because I wouldn't want somebody to come to your house, have an asthma attack because you got five cats.
Exactly.
That happened to me a couple months ago.
What?
I went to show a house and like all these cats came running out the house. Now, thank God I'm not afraid of cats, but I have clients who would be like mortified.
Yeah,
but when
right.
I tell you, I felt like it was cats on my head. It was cats everywhere. And I told a listing agent, you should have let us know that. Because now I'm like, do I chase the cat? Do I try to coax him back in or do I let him go? And then around every corner, there's a cat. So, you know, that was something that, you know, things like that. If I showed a house a couple of years ago where the person was quadriplegic and they had a support track around the whole house. Mm-hmm. And so it's like a harness that they could put the person in and they could have functionality throughout the house. It was very cool. I thought it was very amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's something that you need to disclose in the listing so that when people walk in the house, they're not like, oh my God, you know, what is this?
Yeah.
What's going on? Is this going to come down? Or you can even put it in the agent notes. So it doesn't have to go out to the world, but it goes out to other agents to say, hey, be aware of this, you know.
I wonder, like, because you're right, especially about the pets thing, the alarm thing as well, you know, something that's out of the norm for people. As agents, we should know what is out of the norm. And that right there is a piece of information that's out of the norm. So you don't expect to go into a house and see something like that. Me, myself, I'm not afraid of cats, but I will tell you, I am terrified of dogs. Terrified of dogs.
And I've had a few dogs walk out. You know, you're like, well, hey there, Fido. Knock on wood, I have not walked in a house where there was a snake yet. That would be my... But my very first day showing houses back in August of 2007 in your neighborhood by chance.
Really?
I was so eager to show houses. I ended up showing these folks like 15 houses that day.
Oh my God.
And it was too many. That we'll talk about that in another podcast. But the people left the house so quickly that they forgot to wake grandma up. And grandma was in the bed and I opened the door to show the room. You know, I'm walking around the house. I could smell they had just finished cooking breakfast. I could smell the eggs and the waffles. But they left so fast, grandma was still in the bed. We went to open the room door and she did not speak. I don't think she spoke any English, but thank God I was brand new and had my badge on and I was able to point to it and show her, you know, I'm a realtor. I'm not like, but I know we scared the life out of her. I mean, she was, so that goes to a good listing agent is going to make sure that showings are scheduled in a way that is comfortable for you and your family.
Exactly. It does. It goes back to that experience and it goes back to, you know, just and asking the right questions, asking the right questions, because even with the experience piece of it, even if you don't have someone or even if you haven't been in the business long enough. So I'm not knocking those people who haven't been in the business long enough.
Right, right.
But I am saying, though, that at least if you can have that backbone, like with our group, I'm so excited and love our group so much because all of us specialize in different things.
Yeah.
And at any time, day or night, we could put something in our, you know, in our group texting and say, hey, you guys, this is what's going on. How does you suppose I'm supposed to handle this or whatever that is.
Yep.
So just having somebody who you're able to speak to help you with that. Like everybody knows, you're our listing expert.
Well, thank you.
Expert, hands down. So when I do, I'm going to come to you for certain things because I know you got this. So that's the thing for me. It's just like having that, having that information that's readily available and someone to help you out with certain things.
Well, and also the great thing about us having kind of our own specialty, or and not, I work with buyers, I work with commercial, I work with everybody, but really having done this for what, 14, almost 15 years, I have focused my business more towards listings because I know I've gotten a lot more experience and I can leverage for each listing. I think it's so important for sellers to like and trust your listing agent. Correct. Admittedly, I've had two listings in my whole career where it was just not a good fit. The sellers and I were not a good fit. The houses weren't selling, and it really wasn't, I can say it wasn't my effort, but from the seller standpoint, they wanted something different. And that's okay. I think we all feel like this. If you work with an agent, buyer or seller, and you find that it's not a good personality fit, you don't like the marketing that they're doing of your home, you're not comfortable, you know, if you don't trust them, tell them that. Nobody wants to be in a, you know, forced to work together. Right. And one of the things I try to be very upfront, honest, and I think we all do with sellers is your house may go under contract in 72 hours. It may not. It's easy to look at, oh, well, my neighbor's house sold in 3 days. Exactly. Well, you don't know what those terms were. And so part of what we're doing, what I do in preparing to list your home is I'm going to pull up a market analysis. I'm going to pull up comparative sales in your neighborhood. I'm going to pull up average market time in your area. The house I mentioned earlier that had been on the market 60 days with somebody else. Because I knew it had already had a life on the market, I had to market it a little bit differently. We were under contract within 13 days. Now, was 13 days 3 days? No, it wasn't, but it was still quicker. One of the things I had to tell those sellers is, one, your house is overpriced. They have it overpriced. And I don't know. And this is one thing I tell sellers, you can put whatever price you want to on a house. But the problem is, what is it going to appraise for? What is it going to attract a buyer at? And, you know, so that was one thing. It was overpriced. The second thing is that it didn't highlight some of the better features. The square footage was off.
Wow.
It was in a Harrisburg school district. Why not highlight that? That's something that attracts people. It had an awesome clubhouse and pool that attracts people. Wow. It was in a cul-de-sac. None of that was in the description.
It just was insane, huh?
It was nice house, well-maintained, period. It was just like, that was it. And so now I will say one thing that was interesting was that in the pictures, the pictures are intended to highlight the best features. Right. And I had one realtor come back and say, oh, there's a electrical line two houses over and it looks like you intentionally cut that out. And I'm like, no, but if you came to see the house, you would have seen it there. Like, it's, I'm not hiding it. I don't have a drape over it. You know what I mean? You know, but these are all things that, you know, a very responsible listing agent is going to do. I feel like I don't want to dominate this part, but I get passionate about listings because I just see so much happening or see so many people kind of going down a path and you're like, no, don't do that.
But this is your thing though. Like I said, you are the listing queen of our group. So yes, this is definitely your thing.
So a lot of people ask, and I'm going to pass this one to you. A lot of people say, well, why do I need a listing agent? Why can't I just sell the house myself?
For the same reasons that we just said, pretty much. There are certain things that as a listing agent that you're going to uncover that as a seller, you just don't really think about. So as a listing agent, you need to know what the other houses sold for and why it possibly sold. So why did I have a house sell in my community within 2 weeks or whatever? And it seems like another house sold in my community, and it took 2 months or whatever that is. What happened to that? Before I moved into this house, maybe this was a house that I purchased and it was an already built home. Before I moved into this house, there could have been underlying things that I wasn't aware of when I purchased the house for whatever reason. My listing agent will possibly be able, or should be able, to uncover those things as well, because we're going to look at those types of things. The contract themselves, basically just the contracts themselves, there are certain things in the contract that is signed that as a seller, you are responsible for, and you might not even realize that you are responsible for even after the sale is over. Things that comes back. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, one of the things that's very important, in my opinion, with sellers is not putting the cart before the horse. So I have a lot of people say, oh, I'm under contract now, I should go ahead and move out. And I'm like, no, let's wait, because, you know, as a selling agent, it's our responsibility to be the captain of the transaction. We're making sure the buyer is doing their due diligence, as well as making sure that certain steps are happening along the way. So even after, once you're under contract, we still have a responsibility to kind of guide the buyer and the seller. So I'll speak to two personal experiences, if you don't mind me sharing. I had a house maybe 6 or 8 months ago, somewhere last year sometime. Great house. Great house. Well-maintained, immaculate. The house was phenomenal. We went on the market. It went under contract within 5 days.
Wow.
The buyer had a pre-approval letter, he actually had a pre-approval letter. Now that I think about it, he had a pre-approval. But I wanted the full, approval letter. Kept talking to the buyer's agent. Where is it? In the meantime, he's already turned over due diligence. So we know, we've had to take it off the market for the time period for him to get that. He's had an appraisal. He's had a home inspection. He can't get that loan approval. So now I've got to go back to seller and put the house back on the market.
Wow.
Put the house back on the market. And now I've got to answer to other buyers. Well, what happened? Is it something wrong with the house? Is it something, did something change? Because think about it. If a house was on the market, you liked it, you loved it, it went off the market. Now you're wondering, well, wait, is there something wrong with the house itself?
Correct.
And so we put it back on the market. We got it back under contract. But in the meantime, I'm still having to work with the seller to make sure, don't move out your house too soon. Let's, still adhere to what you need to do as a seller. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, some situations you're guiding the seller even on when the offer comes in. Every offer that, sellers receive, I do a net sheet. If you accept offer A, this is what your bottom line will mostly look like. It's an estimate. It's not an exact number.
Correct.
If we get 8 offers in, what are you going to do? You got to have a realtor there to point out why each offer is strong or not, and maybe make a suggestion about which one or two to have. And then if you want to accept more than one, how do you accept one and have a backup? So it's so many little quirks in there. I tell people all the time, if you absolutely love a house, put in a backup offer. I was a backup offer, and the first folks fell through. They didn't do anything they were supposed to do in due diligence. The listing agent called me and said, hey, if you're still interested, you're next in line. And so for the sellers of the house that we eventually purchased, they didn't have to go through going back on the market, because they had enough offers and interest where they just fell back to a qualified backup offer.
Wow. And you bring up a really good point there, because for the past couple of years, of course, we've been in a seller's market. So immediately someone automatically thinks, well, it's a seller's market, so it'll be easy for me to sell this house on my own without anybody. But you brought up a lot of great points as to why, even though it is a seller's market, you don't want to, even more so, you need to have a listing agent.
Yeah.
Because of
the commissions you pay. I always say, I can't speak to anybody's individual tax situation, but take them with you when take the closing statement. There's a lot of things your tax professional can look at and say, oh, you sold a house this year. Here's what you get to write off. And I'll give you a little bonus nugget. This is for all those listeners out there who are like, wait a minute, what? You buy a house, as long as you live there for 2 out of 5 years, as of right now, you sell that house, you still get to write off, or you still get to claim 100% of that profit, up to $250,000 for an individual, up to $500,000 for a married couple, as tax-free.
What?
So how does that work? Let's say you buy a house this year for $200,000. You hold it for 5 years and you sell it for $275,000 in 5 years, hypothetically. Yes. And just to make the numbers easy, let's say your profit from that is $50,000, right? After you pay fees, calls, taxes, whatever, $50,000. You take that $50,000, you put it in the bank, you don't give Uncle Sam any. As long as you lived in that house, it cannot be an investment property. As long as you lived in that house.
What?
Have you seen that happen for folks?
I have.
I have too. I have.
So that's a good thing. So, you know, you listeners out there, good tidbit right there. So that's good.
And people say, oh, well, houses are, you know, the market's going down. You know, can you speak to that when people say, well, I don't know if I want to buy a house because the market is going down, or if I don't know if I want to change houses because that market's going down? What do you usually say to folks when they give you that?
For one, it's the housing market is very cyclical. And so it is very cyclical. And, you know, we never guarantee what will happen and things like that. I can guarantee you this as far as real estate goes, is that real estate is always a great investment, point blank, if you're doing it correctly and with the right person. So I would definitely say that when I get those types of things, I'm like, look at your individual situation, though. Look at your individual situation to see whether or not this is something that's good for you at this moment. Are you talking about from the buyer's side, or are you talking about from the seller's side?
I think from both. You know, I often think that when people say that, it's almost like a fear of the permanency of buying a house. Like, oh my God, if I buy a house, I'm going to have to make payments. It's going to be forever and ever. And all I mean, and it's like, no, you just need to hold the house for a period of time till you're ready to sell it. And you can sell the house and move on.
You're exactly right about that. That right there, when it's a buyer talking to me, or someone who should be buying, and they're saying, well, I'm scared of this, or I'm scared of that, you know, those are just objections that those are not real objections. I don't want to say fake objections, but not real objections, because those objections are just like you said, the fear.
Yeah.
And you can't live your life in fear as far as that goes. If you say I want to purchase, but I truly, and you just truly don't have the credit score for it, or you truly don't have, you know, I wouldn't even say the money, because if you're renting, you got the money to purchase a house.
Yeah, I agree.
But you truly don't have the credit score for it. That's a bit different. You need to get your credit score up. But the make-believe fears are the things that kind of that throw me, and we can get over those.
Well, and you know, when it comes to selling a house, it's like people say, well, oh my God, what if I don't? One of the things I hear is, well, what if I don't want to live there in 5 years? Call me back. We'll put the house on the market. You'll sell it. You'll make a profit. You'll move on. You can either go back to renting, or you can go back to selling. I mean, go back to buy another house. And one of the things we often say to people is that when you're buying a house, if you make a smart purchase, if you buy a house that's not overpriced, it's in an area, you know, that is not declining in value, which that's something your realtor is going to explain to you or talk to you about.
Right.
In a normal situation, your house is going to appreciate. Even if it doesn't appreciate, let's say it doesn't go up, but 5%, you're going to have what you paid down from your principal balance. So let's say, for instance, you're renting an apartment, $1,000 a month, which is about normal in Charlotte, you know, 12 months, that's $12,000, 5 years, that's $60,000. So if you bought a $200,000 house, even with interest, you would have paid that down. Let's maybe not exactly 60, but you would have paid down a big chunk of that. When you go to sell that house, you get some of that back. You get, you know, you get what you paid down on the principal balance back. When you check, when you turn in or end a lease, I don't even know what you could say anymore. When you end a lease, you don't get any money back. You might get your security deposit, but that's it.
Which might be $1,000. But even, and even with that, to add on to that, what about the interest that you paid in that house? So the interest that you paid in that house, the tax write-off that you have in that house, mm-hmm. you actually receive so much more mm-hmm. from that house. And your credit score has risen.
Yeah, because now you have a track record and a history of paying for an asset that appreciates. And we'll talk about this in another podcast, but when you're thinking about if you have a family, whether it's a spouse or parents or children or nieces and nephews, and you're thinking about leaving a legacy, you know, having a home, there's ways that you can continue to advance your family even when you're no longer here. Through home, through real estate ownership. And one of the things that I see happening sometimes is granddaddy bought a house 80 years ago, but now the family doesn't have the mindset for ownership. And so they sell this beautiful home in a historic neighborhood. And oftentimes it's for a really nice profit. Or they keep it in the family, but you know, you can't do that if you don't start. So whether you're a first generation home buyer or whether or not you are a seller looking to move to your next property, Carrot Properties can take care of it for you.
Exactly. Well, I think that we did a great job with the seller's part of it tonight. What do you think?
I think we did. I think we really just talked about the pros and cons and benefits, and I hope we can come together and talk about the actual listing and selling process, because you know that gets me so hyped and excited.
I know. I love it. Always great having a conversation with you. And out to our audience out there tonight, just want to let you know that we are available for you to answer any questions that you may have. We would love to speak with you. And if there are any topics that you would like for us to go over, we will be more than happy to talk about those as well. Would you agree?
I would agree.
All right, my love. Well, it was great talking to you tonight.
Thank you. Enjoy the rest.
Thank you, MJ.
All right. Well, look, you all have a wonderful night. Make sure you follow us on Facebook. Each one of us have Facebook pages. I'm MJ Clay at carrotproperties.com. Sharice, you want to give me your email address?
And I am Sharice Lloyd at carrotproperties.com. And I am Sharice Chandler Lloyd on Facebook.
All right. And you can always follow our Carrot Properties Facebook page. And we would love to connect with you. Please share this podcast if you find it to be useful, helpful. And also, if you, like Sharice said, if you have topics you want us to cover, or if you have questions, we would love to. We're going to do a question and answer podcast in a couple more series so we can just answer all of those burning questions out there. And also check our Facebook page and our website for upcoming events.
Definitely. All right. Have a nice night, everyone.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.